Go to Navadvip Dham, you'll see, especially if you do Navadvip Parikrama, that almost every place that you visit is a Gaudiya Math temple. This is because Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur established over 17 temples, Gaudiya Math temples, around the Parikrama path, because he himself was the one who instituted this Navadvip Parikrama on the order and guidance of his father, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So then we'll study a little about the teachings, particularly we'd like to maybe sing some of the bhajans of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And he is really the prime revealer of the Dhamma. Practically everything comes through him. Although we have the Leela and some of the philosophy coming from, of course, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita, and Vrindavan Das Thakur in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, the most prominent person who has given us guidelines how to enter the Dhamma is Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself. Then the next day, or next week, we'll do Jagannath Puri, and we'll end with a slideshow, so then we'll see the beauty of the Dhamma. And then the next week we'll do Jagannath Puri in the same way, and the prominent personalities will be, of course, Lord Jagannath, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his Leela in Jagannath Puri. And then we'll cover some of the glories of Haridas Thakur. When I was studying and preparing this class, I had an opportunity to read about Haridas Thakur many times, and became very much impressed with the instruction that is there in his life. So we will hear about him and understand his pastimes both in Puri and also as a general associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then we'll come here to Vrindavan, and hopefully my plan is that we can go out sometimes on Parikrama since we're already in Vrindavan. We can't go out in Puri, we can't go out in Navadvip just yet, but we hope that we can attend some Parikrama here in Vrindavan. So as you see, the first class again is general information, then Rinda Devi will be the prominent personality and some explanation will be given about her. Then Purnamasi Yoga Maya, and we may cover some other personalities at the same time, depending on how much information I can collect together on each person. But Rinda Devi, we have quite a lot of information. Then we would like to talk about the trees of Vrindavan, because that's actually how we started our investigation and our inquiry into the nature of Vrindavan Dham. Myself and my husband, we've been living here now 12 years, and I think it's perhaps about 6 years ago, having nothing better to do, and one afternoon going on a japa walk around Vrindavan Parikrama path, it occurred to me, seeing we passed by one great tree, another tree, another tree, each one with its pastime, that maybe I could write something down about them. And I was only thinking of something like a few stories with a few photos, take a few photos and stick them in. And because we were already making, or I was making with Kalindi's help, some little boxes with dust and water from the different dhams, beginning with Vrindavan and then going to Navadvip and Puri also. So I was thinking it would be nice to have in the same way, very simple, something about the trees. And from that point, everything else took place. So it was by the mercy of these trees of Vrindavan that any information that I have gained, or any ability to understand the Dham, has taken place. Originally from the dust, because as when we study Vrindavan, we'll find out that the most prominent, merciful feature of Vrindavan is actually the dust, which is difficult for a materialistic person to understand, but it's like that. And then in the last week, we'll do Gaur-mandal, so it may be possible for us to go to the Samadhi of Srinivasacharya, which is here in Vrindavan, and hear the stories there. It's just a matter of transporting us all to that place, so we'll see what we can arrange. And then we can also visit Radha Gokulananda temple, which I think we'll be doing anyway as a Parikrama, because the just recently the new Samadhi of Narottam Das Thakur has been erected there. Previously there was a Samadhi there which was damaged by vandalism. They had stolen the front panels of the Samadhi, leaving it looking just like a marble box. And the back of the samadhi, the dome on the top, had already fallen earlier. It was just cement. So seeing this, we became inspired with our collections from the boxes that we were making, the dust, that it would be nice to somehow or other fix that samadhi. Then we went and spoke to Srivats Goswami, who was in charge of that compound, and he thought about it, and we thought about it, and we talked to Achyuta Prabhu, who's in charge of building Srila Prabhupada's samadhi, and he suggested that if you put new marble on it, it's going to be very white, and the old marble will be very yellow, and parts are falling off, and you won't be able to get the same design. So we should collect some money and build a whole new samadhi. So if we go there, when we go there, you'll see that it looks a little tiny Prabhupada samadhi. It's all very, very beautiful, all done, all new and white and shiny. It makes all the rest of the samadhis look like they also need to be improved. So we have a plan also to next to renovate Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's samadhi, which is right next door to that. And interestingly enough, I remember when I first came 12 years ago to Vrindavan, we went to that place. And I saw it then and thought, oh, it'd be really nice to fix this, because all the things on the top, little tower things, they were all eroding away. The stone was disappearing and there was just a spike left. So since that time, the red stone has become even more broken. So we hope that that will be our next project, so we can keep that in mind. So we'll go to those places and then we'll finish up with some bhajan and kirtan on the last night. And any questions? So first of all, today, I think to keep this schedule, we should discuss something about Navadvip Dham itself. And tomorrow, we'll discuss about Srila Prabhupada. And then the next day after that, we'll give out this, we have some books printed, but we don't have a sufficient number here yet. So they're coming from Delhi, and when they arrive, then we'll give everybody one book. Unfortunately, this is the first time I've ever taught like this, so I'm a little new. And I didn't have time to, having not taught this as a subject, I didn't have time to fully get together all the material that I'd like to put into the book. But I was thinking that if this becomes a subject to be taught again, then gradually I can include the things that I will speak about, but I'll be unable to actually have for you time to form. But in the book that you'll be given, there's a page on each dham with a list of certain important information. So in Navadvip Dham, the first one, we talk first of all about what are the prominent worshipful personalities. Who is the most dominant personalities in each dham? Then what is the particular mood of that dham? Then the significance, what is the special feature of that particular place? And then what is the particular mercy? What is the agent, the thing that is valuable in that place that one should take advantage of when one goes to that place? How will one achieve the most mercy possible? Then some information, whatever I could collect, or the prikram, if there is a prikram course in that place, how to do it. And then just any other points will be included after that. And there's a list of different books that I myself had opportunity to look at even briefly, that are authorized subject matter on that particular dham, if anyone wants to look them up and study them further. Then a list of the personalities as we saw on this schedule. And then I think that's basically it. And we have some bhajans, which some we can read, and there's some astakams also that we can read on the different personalities, and some we can sing. Some of them will be a little new, so but there's some point in them that I put them in under that subject. So first of all, speaking about Navadvip Dham, we should first of all understand what is a dham, because we're talking about four different dhams. Why should we be talking about them at all? What is to be gained, and why should one come and visit them, and what does it mean at all? So if we want to understand this, we can have, also I mostly I'll try to read, as I know it's much more spontaneous if you can speak, but the subject matter of transcendental subject matter of the pastimes and also of the transcendental Dharma is so subtle that it's not really understandable by us. Actually, this was one thing I discovered, that in our conceptualizations, we can't actually understand Navadvipa Dham. We can't understand any of these places. We have to simply hear from authoritative sources. So here we have a map that will give us some idea of what is the layout of Navadvipa. In the center, you can see Antadvipa. And surrounded, we start, and also this is relevant when we come to talk about Parikrama. When we do Navadvipa Parikrama, we begin in Antadvipa, and then we go up, and then we go clockwise around to Simantadvipa, Godram, Nadia, Koladvipa, Ritudvipa, Janadvipa, Modadramdvipa, Rudadvipa, and back into Antadvipa. And our Krishna, Mayapur Chandradoya Mandir is actually situated in Rudradvipa. But part of it is in Antadvipa, part of our land is also in Antadvipa. So Antadvipa is the same as actually Mayapur. Mayapur is non-different than Antadvipa. Krishnadas, is this somebody who, Ananda, you have the key, you know the combination to him? Can you go downstairs and there's a, you know that shelf where the tape recorder is? There's a roll of maps. We have a smaller map of also just Antadvipa itself. So Srila Prabhupada explains in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita, Adi Lila chapter 5. He's speaking about Gokul. And he explains that in the highest region of the spiritual sky, is a spiritual planet called Krishna Loka. It has three divisions, Dwarka, Mathura, and Gokul. Sri Gokul is the highest of all, and is also called Braj, Goloka, Swetadvipa, and Vrindavan. So these are four names given also to Gokul. Like the transcendental body of Lord Sri Krishna, Gokul is all-pervading, infinite and supreme. It expands both above and below without any restriction. Now, in the purport of this verse, Srila Prabhupada is quoting from Brahma Samhita, where Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is explaining what is Goloka, the transcendental region, and also what is Swetadvipa. And sometimes Navadvipa is also called Swetadvipa. So then, Srila Prabhupada says, Srila Jiva Goswami, the great authority and philosopher in the line of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, has discussed the abode of Krishna in his Krishna Sandarbha. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord refers to my abode. Srila Jiva Goswami, examining the nature of Krishna's abode, refers to the Skanda Purana, which states, the abodes of Godhead in the material world, such as Dwarka, Mathura, Goloka, are facsimiles representing the abodes of Godhead in the kingdom of God. Vaikuntha Dham. The unlimited spiritual atmosphere of that Vaikuntha Dham is far above and beyond the material cosmos. This is confirmed in the Swayambhu Tantra, in a discussion between Lord Shiva and Parvati regarding the effect of chanting the mantra of the 14 syllables. There it is stated that while chanting the mantra, one should always remember the spiritual world, which is very extensive, full of desire trees that can yield anything that one desires. Below that Vaikuntha region is the potential material energy which causes the material manifestation. The places and pastimes of Lord Krishna, such as Dwarka, Mathura, and Vrindavan, eternally and independently exist in Krishna Loka. They are the actual abode of Lord Krishna, and there is no doubt that they are situated above the material cosmic manifestation. So here, Srila Prabhupada, when he refers to Vaikuntha Dham, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur uses the term Vaikuntha to refer to everything right up to Krishna Loka itself. All of the spiritual abodes he categorizes under this term of Vaikuntha. So now Srila Prabhupada says, the abode known as Vrindavan or Gokul is also known as Goloka. So this is a very high subject matter that I don't feel prepared to discuss in detail now in terms of the spiritual world and the here and that and so forth, but I'm getting to the particular point and it's helpful to read the continuity of thought. In case you're going to ask me any questions. The Brahma Samhita describes that Gokul, the highest region of the kingdom of God, resembles a lotus flower with thousands of petals. The outer portion of that lotus-like planet is a square place, quite amazing, squares and circles, they're all there, is a square place known as Sweta Dweep. In the inner portion of Gokul, there is an elaborate arrangement for Sri Krishna's residence with his eternal associates such as Nanda and Yasoda. That transcendental abode exists by the energy of Sri Baladev, who is the original hall of Shesh or Ananta. The Tantras also confirm this description by stating that the abode of Ananta Dev is called the kingdom of God. Vrindavan Dham is the innermost abode within the quadrangular realm of Sweta Dweep, which lies outside the boundaries of Goloka Vrindavan. So then Srila Prabhupada explains, From the authoritative evidence cited by Jiva Goswami, we may conclude that Krishna Loka is the supreme planet in the spiritual sky, which is far beyond the material cosmos. For the enjoyment of transcendental variety, the pastimes of Krishna there have three dimensions. And these pastimes are performed in the three abodes of Dwarka, Mathura, and Gokul. When Krishna descends to this universe, he enjoys the pastimes in the places of the same name. These places on earth are non-different from those original abodes, for they are facsimiles of those original holy places in the transcendental world. They are facsimiles. Another word is used by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, quasi-spiritual. That means that they're transcendental, but they're not the same in another sense as those transcendental abodes. They're the same and not the same. He sometimes explains, because we can ask if this is the same here, what we're seeing here, as there, does that mean there are tea stalls there, and rickshaw wallahs that cheat you when you go down to the bazaar, and hand-chewing shopkeepers, and so many things, pandas asking you for money, are they all there? Because we see all those things here. So Prabhupada says that these places on earth are non-different from those original abodes. They are as good as Sri Krishna himself and are equally worshipable. Lord Chaitanya declared that Lord Krishna, who presents himself as the son of the king of Braj, is worshipable, and Vrindavan Dham is equally worshipable. So first he makes the point that this place is equally worshipable. But then here and in other places he explains, but it is covered by a thin covering of the modes of nature. And those who do not have the qualification to actually enter into Vrindavan Dham, as it's described here, they exist on this thin covering of the modes of nature. Srila Jiva Goswami asked this question also to Nityananda Prabhu when he was taking him to Navadvipa and going around on Prikram. He asked him, what about all the people who live here and there's so many benedictions and they live here and they're not getting those things, how could that be? That doesn't make any sense. So then Lord Nityananda explained that somebody who lives in the Dham but has no inclination towards the worship of the personality who is represented, their leaders are represented there, they live on this outer covering of the modes of nature. So the living, you can say in the Dhamma and not in the Dhamma simultaneously. Just like we see in the story of Prahlad Maharaj, that when Lord Nrisimhadeva wanted to cheat Hiranyakashipu, who thought himself so intelligent that he would cover himself, make himself immortal by so many benedictions, he killed him in the doorway, not in the house, not out of the house. So in the same way, someone can live in the Dhamma, but not be in the Dhamma and not be out of the Dhamma. Therefore, there's something valuable to be living like that. But if they want to enter into the Dhamma and actually be a Brajavasi or Navadvipvasi, they have to have a strong and deep desire to worship Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or to worship Radha and Krishna according to the place in which they're residing. Then Srila Prabhupada goes on to say that the above mentioned Dhammas are movable by the omnipotent will of Lord Krishna. They're movable. When Krishna appears on the face of the earth, he can also make his Dhammas appear without changing their original structure. One should not discriminate between the Dhammas on the earth and those in the spiritual sky, thinking those on earth to be material and the original abodes to be spiritual. All of them are spiritual. Only for us who cannot experience anything beyond matter in our present condition, do the Dhammas and the Lord Himself in His archer form appear before us resembling matter, to give us the facility to see spirit with material eyes. They resemble matter, so that with material eyes we can see something. Because if we can't see anything with our material eyes, we're asked, before we can experience anything of Krishna's pastimes, before we can enter into His abode, we're asked to first become fully purified and give up our material eyes. As one tape I was listening to recently, Srila Prabhupada was saying, so you can't see Krishna with these eyes. So does that mean that we have to pluck out these eyes? And then he said, no, we have to purify these eyes. So in order for that purification process to be going on, we have to be able to see something. But it resembles matter to us in our conditioned state. So then Prabhupada says, in the beginning, it may be difficult for a neophyte to understand, but in due course, when one is advanced in devotional service, it will be easier, and he will appreciate the Lord's presence in these tangible forms. So this is what we've come to hear about. We want to know how to appreciate these places and how to actually gain the benefit that is meant to be gained in these places. So back to directly Navadvipa. The prominent worshipful personalities, as we know, are Sri Gaura and Nitai. And their pastimes comprise the major writing that is given about the Dhammas, about Navadvipa Dhamma. Of course, we know also that this is the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya, and he lived here and he appeared here performing his pastimes for 24 years. And then he proceeded on and he went to Jagannath Puri. And the other 24 years of his manifested pastimes took place in Jagannath Puri. So there are two places we study in relationship to Lord Chaitanya. And of course, one place that we study in relationship to Radha and Krishna. So then, the significance of the Dhamma. What is the importance of this Dhamma of Navadvipa? One significant point is that it is non-different from Vrindavan. So again, in 1 hour's study, this is a very vast subject. It is also spoken of in Brahma Samhita. An explanation is given in there why it is that Navadvipa Dham is a creation or an extension of Vrindavan Dham itself. In that book, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains that Navadvipa Dham is like an appendix to a book. If you write a book with so much information in it, and at the end you want to add something you haven't spoken about yet, and it's very relevant and very important, you put it in an appendix form, appendix 1, appendix 2, until you have all your information complete. So the pastimes that Krishna performs in Vrindavan are complete. But there were some things that he couldn't accomplish, some things he wanted to experience or taste. He's the absolute supreme Lord, but we know that he's acting under the influence of his yoga maya potency in order to have pastimes. If he's the supreme Lord, he's everything, he's omnipotent, omnipresent, he's in everything, everything is a creation of him. How can he have any lila or any activities? Because everything is already him. So in order to have activities and pastimes, loving pastimes, he places himself under the control of his yoga maya potency. And this yoga maya, or his internal energy, spiritual energy, arranges also to cover those souls, those jivas, who have acquired purity of heart and pure love for him. And they are also covered. And because the covering is yoga maya, not mahamaya, like we're covered with, that creates forgetfulness in us. But this kind of forgetfulness causes them to forget his opulences. They forget that he's so powerful. They forget that he's everywhere. And they think that he's just their small child, or he's their friend, or he's their lover. Any of these five relationships, they think of him in that mood. They don't any longer think that he's God and I should fold my hands and offer so many prayers to him. There's a place where persons who like to have that kind of mood of reverence and respect, everybody's mood can be accommodated. So there's a place that you can go and have that mood also. But then in Goloka Vrindavan, which is the topmost place in this Vaikuntha region, at that place, all of this reverence and fearfulness, actually, is all removed. And simply there's only just loving exchanges. So Lord Chaitanya is, as we know, non-different than Radha and Krishna. Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Radha Krishna Nayanya. So why does Krishna come in this form of Lord Chaitanya? So this is explained by Kaviraj Goswami in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita, that Krishna, he wanted to taste three things. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also refers to this. He says that Krishna accepts the emotions and the effulgence of Srimati Radharani and makes an eternal pastime for his own enjoyment in Navadvip. Sri Krishna Chandra desires the following pleasures. He wants to realize, first, the nature of the greatness of the love of Sri Radha for him. Second, the nature of the wonderful sweetness of his love, of which Sri Radha has got the taste. And third, the nature of the exquisite joy that accrues to Sri Radha by her realization of the sweetness of his love. For these three reasons, he took his birth like the moon in the ocean of the womb of Sri Sachi Devi. The esoteric desire of Sri Jiva Goswami is herein made manifest. In the Vedas it is said, let me tell you the mystery. This is the mystery of Navadvip. In Navadvip, the identical realm of Goloka, on the bank of the Ganges, Gaurachandra, who is Govinda, the entity of pure cognition, that means full pure consciousness, who has two hands, not four hands, like Lord Narayana, and who is beyond the threefold mundane attributes, sattva, rajas, and tamas, he's beyond the modes of nature, makes the process of pure, unalloyed devotion, spontaneous, pure love for Krishna, manifest in this material world. So this is what Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who he is, why he came, and what he's come to give. He has come to manifest pure unalloyed devotion in the mundane world. He is the sole Godhead. He is the source of all forms. He is the Supreme Lord, manifest in yellow, blue, white, and red colors. Means in different yugas, Krishna appears in these different colors. He is the bestower of devotion and cognizable by devotion alone. That means you can't understand him unless you have bhakti. And he's the giver of that bhakti. He's so merciful, he's giving away Krishna prema. And when you have that Krishna prema, you can understand him. Only Krishna can give away love for himself. And only Krishna himself can show the perfect example of service to himself. So Krishna appears just like a teacher. He may be a PhD teacher, he may know so many things, but if he has some little students, he'll be writing on the board, A, B, C, follow this, you write this, and they're all writing in their book, A, B, C. And he's teaching them. He's not like them. He doesn't have to learn A, B, C. He's already in full knowledge of these things. But for the sake of guiding them, he's showing an example. So in the same way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he appears, he's Krishna himself. He has his inner motive, his personal reasons for coming. And this is clearly explained in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita in Adivida 4, that these are his primary reasons for coming, to taste something himself. This is why he creates Navadvip as an appendix of Vrindavan. But in the meantime, not only is he doing this for himself, but because he's the Supreme Lord, he's also bestowing what no other incarnation has ever given. Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale. He's giving what no one ever has given. He's giving away pure love for himself, because he's Krishna himself, with the effulgence and the emotions of Srimati Radharani. So therefore, the self-same Gaurachandra, who is none other than Krishna himself, in order to taste the ras of the pastimes of Radha and Krishna in Gokul, is manifest in the eternal realm of Navadvip, identical with Goloka. Just as Sri Krishna has his birth in the mundane Gokul, mundane here means in the material world, not mundane meaning material itself. Just as Sri Krishna has his birth in the mundane Gokul through the agency of Yoga Maya, who is the primal energy of the Supreme Lord, so also with her help, he manifests the Leela of his birth in the womb of Sachi Devi in Navadvip on this mundane plane. These are the absolute truths of spiritual science and not the outcome of imaginary speculation under the thraldom of the deluding energy of Godhead. So these are not somebody's made-up ideas. This is the truth. This is the reality, transcendental reality. So this is, we can read so many wonderful things that they're glorifying Mayapur Dham, describing also to us that we cannot really see it with our mundane eyes. We cannot see what is there. As long as somebody is in the bodily concept of life and identifying with this material body which is made of material elements, thereby considering themselves either subtly or grossly as part of this world, they cannot enter into the dimension, the transcendental dimension. But for the mercy of those like ourselves who are in that condition, Lord Nityananda is very helpful. So I'd like to read you a little bit from the glories of Sri Navadvip Dhamma, Navadvip Mahatmya, written by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, where he's describing also some important points about Navadvip Dhamma. He's first of all talking about, just as actually in Chaitanya Bhagavat, Chaitanya Charitamrita, the same thing, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains how Lord Nityananda is Anantashesh, how Lord Nityananda is Balaram, what is the functions of Balaram in serving Krishna. As I was saying, we have here Krishna Balaram on the main altar. What does Balaram do? He's the servitive Godhead. He's the first expansion of Krishna. He's none different than Krishna except for his color. And he does all services He provides, he himself is the Dham. He's all the paraphernalia that's used to serve Krishna. It's all an expansion of Balarama. So he gives everything for the pleasure of Krishna. So similarly in Navadvip Dham, if we want to get this prema, prema bhakti, that Lord Chaitanya, that Krishna has come in the form of Lord Chaitanya to give, we have to first approach to the mercy of Lord Nityananda. And Lord Nityananda is very, very accessible to us. We also read that the Guru Tattva, the Guru Parampara, Guru is a manifestation also of Lord Nityananda, Nityananda's mercy. So this is why in our next course, the next class, we would like to discuss first Srila Prabhupada and what was his vision of Navadvip, what he wanted to show the world, what he is supposed to manifest to the world. So, but first we'll read a little bit here about Lord Nityananda himself. So it's describing that Lord Nityananda would go out everywhere calling out, "Come, spirit souls of Kali Yuga, give up this hypocrisy and just accept the pure ecstatic love of Sri Gauranga." In this way, Nityananda Prabhu would call out again and again, but still the unfortunate living entities did not accept. Now, let us consider carefully why these people do not accept such wonderful love of God. So we can see we have a nice number of devotees here, but you're from all over the world. And if you examine how many people are not coming forth, we can see that only a tiny, tiny, tiny quantity of people are accepting this love of God. So why? In pursuit of happiness, living entities in the material world follow various processes, such as logic or mystical yoga. And in quest of happiness, some give up the material world and go to the forest, while kings constantly wage wars amongst themselves. We don't have kings now, but we see plenty of politicians who are doing this. So much politics going on. In India, in the whole world, fighting. Trying to get this thing from this country, that thing for this country, and ultimately trying to get everything for their very selves. Not caring at all for the rest of the country. Sachi, can you close the door so it doesn't get a little cold? Thank you. So much fighting is going on. Desiring happiness, others run after women, others run after wealth, others take to the arts and sciences. In pursuit of happiness, others reject happiness and learn to tolerate the miseries of life. We see so many philosophies like that, where you should reject happiness. Just like I was thinking, sometimes in the beginning of living here in Vrindavan, I didn't go very often to the West. And you go back, and then at the time when I first came, when it became very fashionable, especially in New York, this punk styles, and you go back and look at the people. They cut off half their hair, dyed it pink, and have things hanging, and chains around their neck, and tattoos all over their bodies, and rings in their ears, and rings in their nose, and rings everywhere. And you look at them and you think, they're not becoming beautiful. They're rejecting beauty and becoming ugly. They're happily becoming ugly. So in the same way, out of extreme frustration and perversion of this happiness principle, we see that people reject happiness also. So I don't even want to be happy. I'll just go and renounce everything. I'll undergo all these severe austerities. I'll do this. So many things in pursuit of happiness, but going in the wrong direction, they become all twisted up and they become quite mad. And of course, Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur is writing 100 years ago. So if he were to see now what people are doing in pursuit of happiness, I'm sure he'd be quite horrified. So others simply drown themselves in the ocean or commit suicide, as we see so many times. So raising his lotus hands in the air, Lord Nityananda explains, "Come, living entities, give up the troubles of karma and jnana. Since you are endeavoring for happiness, I will give you happiness without asking anything in exchange. In this happiness there is no trouble, there is no loss, and there is no pain. Just chant the names of Gauranga and dance without anxiety. There's nothing equal to the happiness that I am giving. That happiness is pure, eternal ecstasy beyond all illusion. So this is the mood of Lord Nityananda. In this way, Nityananda Prabhu begged everyone to take pure ecstatic love. But still, unfortunate persons, influenced by previous sinful activities, did not want to accept it. But if such persons chant even once the names of Gauranga and Nittai, the effects of unlimited sinful activities are destroyed. So this is the special, most amazing thing about Navadvipa Dham. The mercy of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda is so accessible that even if you don't want to take it, just you go there, you'll benefit unlimitedly, inconceivably you'll be benefited just by thinking about Navadvipa. I think Lord, here, in this book, yes, he who lives in Navadvipa is very fortunate, for he achieves attraction for Krishna. He who happens to go there becomes free of all offenses. What one attains by traveling to all holy places is attained just by remembering Navadvipa. In this way, the scriptures sing. He who sees Navadvipa gets ecstatic love of Krishna birth after birth. So this is the thing that is wanted. This is the thing that Lord Chaitanya has come to give. So it can be obtained simply by service of all, simply by thinking all, simply by praying to the mercy of Navadvipa Dham. Even one who goes to Navadvipa desiring to gain material comforts through pious activities will not take another birth. The Shastras say that one who walks around Navadvipa attains the fruits of millions of Asavamedha Yajnas at every step. And one who lives in Navadvipa and chants mantras obtains the sound of Chaitanya as his mantra and easily is free from Maya. What yogis obtain after 10 years at other tirthas is obtained in 3 nights in Navadvipa. So I was just thinking, actually, I had an experience just a matter of weeks ago that I had the good fortune to get to spend about 3 days, just 3 days, in Mayapur. Some people from Delhi were going and they requested me to come with them to show them some different places. So we arrived in Calcutta, stayed at Mawari family, and we stayed in their house, in the house of that part of the family. Their family in Delhi are very making a lot of advancement and getting a lot of association with the devotees. But in Calcutta, the whole family knew nothing. So we went there, and they were at that time eating onions, everything, and onions, garlic, tea, coffee, whatever. So we ended up accumulating about 10 members of the group, all these family members who showed up, this one, this one, this one. And we took a bus and we went to Navadvipa, public government bus, and it was jammed and crowded and noisy and dirty and going along, bumping, 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 and they were all sitting there. One of the family members from Calcutta had been going to Navadvipa, and I usually carry Srila Prabhupada with me in a small box. So he was already chanting 6 rounds a day, he'd been going regularly, knew some devotees in Mayapur. So he was carrying Prabhupada and we were bumping along. And then we come, when you're going to Navadvipa first, you come along the road and then you turn a very sharp back. And then you come to a railway line, and I've been told that Jayapataka Maharaj gets out there and pays his obeisances there because that's the beginning of Navadvipa Dham. So when we got to there, I was chanting, and this lady from Delhi is very enthusiastic about chanting, having kirtan. So everywhere we went, she'd say, kirtan, kirtan. So we'd get out our kartals and we'd sing. And so I said, when I finished my rounds, and actually I finished my last bead as we got to that spot. So then we got out the kartals and we just started singing. And by the time we arrived in Mayapur, all around us in the bus, everyone was singing. And it was just an amazing mood. So the whole bus, they're all singing, drivers singing, we're all singing. So we stopped outside Navadvipa, we all bustled out. And it was very funny because one of the members of the family, her brother-in-law, was a worshipper of Durga, Kali, and was very adamant in his worship. So the first night that I was there, they asked me to have a kirtan and speak something, and I spoke a little bit. And then he put his hand up and he started asking me, "What about Durga?" And I said, "Oh." I was trying to avoid his questions, and he was looking very glum. And everywhere I could see that everyone else was listening and he wasn't, and he'd sit there down. And then by the end of those 3 days in Navadvip, we went to Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house, and we had a huge kirtan there. And after the kirtan, I was seeing his face had completely changed. And then when we went back to Calcutta, I spent another day with them in their house, and he had become completely bright. And then he started, then he had all sorts of good arguments. He wanted to argue with me about this, but you know, this and this and this. So I kept telling him that actually, and this lady Raina from Delhi, everywhere we went, she turned to her and said, "Do you eat onions or garlic?" It was really amazing. And I said, "If you go for it," and she started, and she'd come right down the list, and they'd all sit there and go like this. "So do you chant Mala? What are you chanting?" So she had all of her family members just by the influence of being in Navadvip. Even if it wore off, but these are the benedictions that are available. So this was the blessings that they were achieving, obtaining, just by 3 nights in Navadvip. And as I said, the most extreme of the party was completely inimical to everything that we were saying in every place. But still, by the end of 3 nights, his heart was very, very much softened. So we should know that there is no higher dharma. It's also a fact that Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that in Kali Yuga, all the other dharmas will become weaker. In Kali Yuga, all holy places are extremely weak. Only Navadvipa is supremely strong. Why is that? Because people come to these dharmas and they come with all their sins. And they come here and they come and they pray, just as when they go to a saintly person, they want to touch his feet. Why do they want to touch his feet? Because they want to deposit their sins there. And they want to take some punya from him, some blessings. Why? Not so that they can make bhakti, that they can become spiritually advanced. They want to go on with their material life. So it's very convenient for them to come and drop off their sins and get some piety, and then they can go back and sin some more. So this is the mentality of everyone in Kali Yuga. Everything is so immensely sinful. Everyone is sinful. So therefore, when they come to the dance, they deposit their sinful reactions, and then they leave. So this is very, very difficult to be counteracted in Kali Yuga. But by the Lord's desire, this Tirtha, this is talking about Navadvip, was invisible for a long time, and its glories lay unrevealed. But when the influence of Kali Yuga increased, naturally the holy places, the other holy places, lost their power. At that time, desiring the good fortune of all living entities, the Supreme Lord thought, upon diagnosing a disease, a doctor prescribes an appropriate medicine. Accordingly, a strong medicine is given for a severe disease. Now that Kali Yuga has become terrible, and the disease is so serious, there will be no relief without a strong medicine. So we see this. We study, if we read of the life of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he asked all of his disciples to chant 64 rounds. Srila Prabhupada also took this chanting 64 rounds. When he came to America, he also came thinking what to do. He wanted us also to chant. So he said he was thinking of 64, but he could see, how can any of these people chant 64 rounds? So he reduced to 32. Everyone looked, no one could chant 32 rounds. Then, all right, 16 rounds, but no less, he said, reducing by a quarter and a quarter to just one quarter of what was expected 50, 60 years ago. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu writes, Vrindavan Das Thakur writes in the Chaitanya Bhagavad, that nobody can be considered a Vaishnava unless they chant 64 rounds. But as Kali Yuga progresses, who can do this? So therefore, the Lord, being so merciful, he reduces the expectation and he increases the amount of mercy, just as a doctor, when he sees that someone's severely ill, he gives the most potent medicine to help them to come back and revive their health. So this is also the case with Lord Chaitanya. He says, Kali Yuga has become terrible, the disease is serious, and there will be no relief without a strong medicine. If I do not reveal the Dharma, the name, and my form, which I have been holding secretly for so long, how will the living entities ever recover? The living entities are my servants and I am their Lord. If I do not help them, they will never be delivered. Saying this, Lord Chaitanya appeared on earth with his name, Dham, and associates. The Lord promised that he will always deliver the living entities from the troubles of material existence. Lord Gauranga said, without considering who is fit and who is unfit, there is no consideration, oh, you're very qualified, you're very intelligent, or you're very learned, you're very from a very high family. No, there's nothing like that. This was one of the things that we will study. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur fought so vehemently against in order to open the doors of Lord Chaitanya's Dham so that we could enter. He fought against all of these rigid ideas of Brahman ideas, caste Brahman ideas, that you have to be a Brahman to do this, you have to be this, you have to be this. No, there's no qualification required. Only you come and take. This is the only thing needed. So he says, without considering who is fit and who is unfit, in this incarnation I will freely distribute the treasure of love, which is rarely attained even by Lord Brahma. I will see how Kali can destroy these living entities. I will manifest Navadvipa Dham and break the poisonous teeth of Kali by performing congregational chanting of the Lord's holy names. As long as my name is sung, Kali will be controlled. So this is a very, very important point here. And Srila Prabhupada also, as we all know very well, he wanted that the influence coming from Navadvipa Dham should spread all over the world. He was his vision of what was Mahaprabhu's lila and desire was so vast that it didn't exclude anyone. He had such a perspective. I many times tell this point, but it always never fails to amaze me that my husband and I, when we were in the Philippines, and Srila Prabhupada told us personally, it is my desire that all souls in the universe go back to Godhead. You please help me with this. So if we think about that, we can't. It's inconceivable. We can't even estimate how many souls are in this room. Because between every atom, there is a jiva. There is in our own body, how many souls we are responsible for. One time one devotee told me a wonderful story that she became very unhappy. And she wanted to commit suicide. Very difficult situation. So Srila Prabhupada explained to her that you can't. Because there are so many living entities in your body and they're all depending on you. Well, you can't. But then she had a whole different perspective of her residence in her body that she was thinking of as herself. There are so many living entities just with us. What to speak of in the universe? We're so tiny, inconsequential in size, and then the whole universe. Who can have such a broad, extraordinary intelligence as to think of the well-being of all living entities? Only somebody who is in touch, fully connected by consciousness to the Supreme Consciousness. Because we see in the prayers of Lord Chaitanya by Vasudev Datta, he's also praying like that. I want that you deliver the whole universe. And let them all, if you think they're too sinful to be able to be delivered, then you give all their sin to me, and I'll go to hell. And then you take them all. And when Lord Chaitanya heard that, he was amazed. He said, who can think like this? This is so astonishing. And he glorified Vasudev Datta, but he also pointed out that there are unlimited universes. That there is not, if one universe is vacated and all the souls go immediately to Krishna Loka, what about there are so many more? Unlimited jivas, inconceivable, beyond space and beyond time. So just as the inconceivable nature of the spiritual energy cannot be understood by us because we're limited by space conceptions and time conceptions, so in the same way the transcendental nature of the Dham cannot be understood through our intelligence. It cannot. Just as you cannot put an enormous thing into a small space. So we cannot understand by this process. But we can understand something by the process of hearing from these exalted personalities who have realization of the same. So I have a feeling I've gone a little over time. So I can hear the conch blowing in the temple. So I don't know, if anyone wants to stay, we can have some questions. For those who sudden a sheet is more of a priority, I think that that I've made you right up to being late for the evening, aren't you? So I'll stop here, and if there are any further points to